Yo, what is going on, everybody? Penn Station Sports Talk back, episode number six. I am joined by my still favorite co-host,
Yes.
Justin. It is a Monday night. It is the 1st of July. And ladies and gentlemen, the Mets just finished a thriller of a game that we have to address right away. But before I talk about that game, Justin, how are you doing on this fine, splendid evening?
Ah, I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Nice July. It wasn't hot today, but we're almost at July 4th. So exciting
Almost there.
time.
Almost there. It
Oh,
was a
yeah.
beautiful day. You're right about that. I got outside a little bit. It was not too hot like it was last week. And either way, it was a nice night for baseball. And the New York Mets, who we won't talk about in too much detail today because we have a lot to go over today. We're going to talk about the NBA draft, NBA free agency, and we're going to do our ALNL award picks, mid-season baseball award predictions. And a little spoiler alert, we have some crazy picks in there. We have some shockers, some dark horses. So stay tuned for that. But the Mets went 16 and 8 in June. They had the best offense in baseball during that time. They're one of the hottest teams in baseball. They lose 2 out of 3 over the weekend to the other hottest team in baseball, the Houston Astros. The Astros had come in. I think both of us had said on this podcast, we were waiting and waiting and waiting. The first episode we did, we mentioned how they started the season 7-19 and they were ice cold. And we had kept saying that they're too good of a team to be this bad. And they're a perennial division winner. They'd been to 7 straight AL championship series. And we just knew that they were going to turn it around at some point, and they did. And they're one of the hottest teams in baseball with the Mets. They played over the weekend. The Mets won the first game of the series, and then they lost the other two games. And I think the biggest theme, the biggest takeaway from those two games the Mets lost is, and I'm not making excuses when I say this, so I don't want anyone coming at me, but the lack of bullpen depth and the Edwin Diaz suspension really reared its ugly head in those two losses. Because number one, like we mentioned last week, when you get suspended for the foreign substances, not only is Edwin Diaz suspended, but you don't even get to replace him on the roster. So you're missing a pitching spot. So now you're short an arm in the bullpen, a bullpen that was already struggling. And Sean Reed Foley, who was having a nice season, is out. Brooks Raley had Tommy John. He's out. And then sadly, Drew Smith, who a lot of Mets fans give him crap and kind of, hang him out to dry and want him DFA'd. Drew Smith, in my opinion, I like Drew Smith. He's got good stuff. And he's been pretty good this year. He's been pretty reliable. And as a Met, he's been around for a while, but he had, unfortunately, some elbow tightness. It turns out that he's likely going to have to get Tommy John. And what's sad about it is in that game that Edwin Diaz got suspended, he was the one that had to come in and get the final 3 outs. And he claims that he wasn't rushed into the game, but I really do think that him coming into that scenario on national TV and having to rush and get ready led to his arm injury. Because midway through that game against the Cubs last Sunday, in that ninth inning, when he had to come in out of nowhere, his elbow flared up and he was taken out for Jake Diekman. So I think that contributed. So anyway, the bullpen's been taxed, and this weekend they just didn't have enough arms. I mean, yesterday I went to the game yesterday, had some beautiful seats. It was a really good big game. They got through 8.5 innings. It was a tied game, one of the bottom of the ninth, and then there was a 3-hour rain delay. I did not stay for the whole time, for the whole game, but on the way home, we heard they put this poor kid from AAA out there, and he was getting smacked around. I mean, they were hitting bullets all over the place, the Astros, and they lost 10-5. So it just came down to the Mets not having enough depth in the bullpen to get through that game. I could talk about that series over the weekend for an hour, but this is not a Mets podcast. We don't have the time to do that. So I'm just going to get to what happened today. So today they're playing the Nats. They have 14 games, including today, before the All-Star break against the Nationals, the Pirates, the Nationals again, and the Rockies. Those are all teams under 500. Those are all teams that you should beat. Give me 9-5 over this 14-game stretch. They'll go into the break 49-46, and I'll be happy. So they come in. They're facing Mackenzie Gore, and he is dealing. I mean, this guy is, he has all his pitches working. And then the sixth inning, he gets two outs, and then he gives up a base hit. And so I understand, and Justin, you could weigh in here. I understand the analytics, but there sometimes comes a point where you're overmanaging. And if a guy's got the stuff, you leave him in there. I don't care what the analytics say. I don't care that you're facing a right-hander. You leave the guy in there. So he takes him out. And then the next guy gives up a base hit to Mark Vientos. And then Francisco Alvarez, who's been clutch all year, hits a bullet of a double. And two runs score. So not only the Nationals were up 2-0. I forgot to mention that. Not only did a run score, but now two more runs scored. So the Nationals don't even have the lead anymore. So real quick before I move on, do you think that in baseball sometimes there's this overmanaging where, you know, it's sometimes they're too reliant on the analytics and they don't just let the guy that's got the stuff working just get through it?
100%. I think there's a the best managers have a feel for the game, and almost every team has access to the same. I mean, there's some teams have better analytics than other, but every team's using analytics and understands how to use it and understands what it means. But the best teams know when to use it and when to go with their gut. Those are the teams that go deep into the postseason and win the World Series. You saw with when the 2022 World Series, Rob Thompson pulled Zach Wheeler early due to analytics and brought in Jose Alvarado, and he gave up a 3-run home run to Alvarez,
Yeah.
overmanaging. Rob Thompson, he pulled Christopher Sanchez in the third inning of his start in Game four of the NLCS. That taxed the bullpen. Oh, kind of almost led to their downfall. He left Johan Rojas hit in game seven with the bases loaded due to analytics. That's just some key examples that I had about the Phillies, but it applies to like every team.
Right. I agree. And there is something to be said about having a feel for the game. And the analytics have a place in baseball. I'm not saying they don't, but
They
sometimes you
do.
just got to let your guy rock it. You know what I mean? And Gore was dominating the Mets. And as a Mets fan, I was happy they took him out because he was mowing the Mets down. He had eight strikeouts over 5 2/3, and he took him out, and then it backfired because the Mets got three runs. So anyway, that was a little tidbit on that, but overmanaging, it worked out in the Mets' favor. And then the Nationals end up tying the game on a weird play where it was a little sinking liner to right field and it took a weird bounce and it got over Tyrone Taylor's glove and they scored. So anyway, I can tell you what happened in the 10th inning. Before I do that, I'm going to tell you about the play that is going to get overlooked and nobody's going to talk about, but is the most important play in this game that saved the entire game. In the bottom of the ninth, the Mets sent in Jake Diekman to get three outs to get it to extra innings because it was 3-3. And what's his name? Ildemar Vargas, or no, maybe it was Luis Garcia or Keibert Ruiz. Someone in the bottom of the lineup gets on base, or and they're on second base, and then there's two on and two out. First and second, two out, and the nine hitter Jacob Young comes up and he gets a bullet to right field, a line drive that's going. I thought the game was over. I thought it was going to go over Tyrone Taylor's head, but he's running and he leans out and he stretches and just makes the catch. I mean, he just secured it. It was so close. And if that ball got over his head, the game was over, obviously. I mean, there was a runner at second running on contact. So he makes that play, and if he doesn't, what happens in the 10th inning would not have happened. And what happened in the 10th inning is the Mets scored six runs. JD Martinez, who was in a bit of a slump, 0 for his last 12, I think, hit a monstrous three-run homer. on an 0-2 pitch. What did I tell you a week ago? That is the worst thing you could do as a pitcher. And then Francisco Alvarez hits a triple. He's been red hot for like the last 2 weeks. And then Jose Iglesias, of all people, who ever since he's come up to the Mets, he's released a song. He's hit like four. He's hitting like
His
420, and
song's
he's
pretty
played
good. I'm not
his
going to lie.
dude.
It's actually
His
pretty
song is
catchy.
good.
It is pretty catchy.
It is catchy. It's very catchy. And the fact that he's been rocking, I love it. And I'm listening to it every day. Or I'm going to be listening to it every day. He hits a home run to dead center. I didn't know he had that kind of pop. From what I remember of Jose Iglesias on the Tigers and the Reds, that he was a light hitting shortstop that had a great glove, which he does have a great glove still, but he hits a home run. It's 9-3. And I'm like, oh, great. Little did I know they were going to need it because the Mets throw in Tyler J. They throw me in there, Tyler J, to get the final three outs. And he gives up a double here, double there. And before you know it, it's 9-6, and there's two on. Reed Garrett comes in to get one out. He gives up a base hit. Now it's 9-7. The tying runs are on base, and luckily he strikes out Luis Garcia. So the Mets get a win. Of course, it couldn't be easy. Of course, they had to give me a heart attack, but they got the win. They're now back at 500 at 41-41, but it was a crazy game. And again, that play in the bottom of the ninth is going to get overlooked. But Tyrone Taylor made a phenomenal catch that kept the game going, that allowed the Mets to score six runs and win the game. So a great win. I'm very happy. JD continues to rake, and this offense continues to fire on all cylinders. And I hope they can keep it up going into this weekend. And it was a great win. I just wanted to talk about that before we talked about anything else, but I'm just relieved is what I'll say. The bullpen has a lot of issues. They're going to have to make some moves. We're going to get into, I think, in a week or two, as the trade deadline approaches. It's July 1st. Trade deadline's in exactly a month. We'll get into what each of our teams should do and what players we think will be moved, that kind of thing. And but the Mets are definitely going to need some relievers, some relief pitching, maybe even
Agreed.
another starter. So anyway, relieved is how I feel, and they'll try to go for another win tomorrow night in Washington. But we're moving on to basketball now, and the NBA draft was last Thursday, right? Was it Thursday? Yeah. No,
Last
it wasn't.
Wednesday.
That's Wednesday, sorry.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And this draft was weird. There wasn't a consensus number one. It was kind of a, I don't, I, you know, you never know, but Justin, go
Yeah.
ahead. I see you're
No,
gonna.
yeah, it's like definitely one of the lowest graded draft classes in recent memory. Like all, recent draft classes, like last year there was like Wembanyama, then there was like, Zion and Ja Morant. Like there's been all these really big names recently at the top of drafts. This draft just doesn't have the same like firepower, like guaranteed star power at the top. So there, I think we don't know now, but I think that there's more likely in this draft than any other draft in the past few years that some of the best players are taken more in like the middle of the first round, later first round, maybe even some second rounders, because there's just no clear cons cut and dry, big board as there have been, in previous classes.
So there was no like it wasn't top heavy. There was no clear
No.
number one, which usually doesn't happen. So it was a bit of a
Right.
weird draft in the sense that there weren't wasn't much star power. But hey, you never know. In 5 years, there could be a guy that was drafted late. Maybe one of the guys the Knicks took could end up being a star. You never know.
And the guys who are drafted at the top, they're drafted at the top for a reason. So still, I'm sure in other draft classes, they'd still be like top 10 picks.
Right.
But they just wouldn't be like, maybe number one or number two, or three in some of these other draft classes.
I totally agree, and the Knicks had a lot of picks in this draft. So we'll talk about their draft quickly. So they had 24 and 25 overall in the first round. And there were some rumors swirling that they would maybe trade down, like trade those picks and trade, I'm sorry, trade up to maybe get Zach Edey from Purdue. But
I would have loved. He was taken
that
too
would have
early.
been, yeah, that would have been a good pick. You know, he's a center, and that would have been a good pick to make because of what happened in free agency, which we'll get to. But they stuck with their picks. They didn't trade them, and they ended up taking. Well, they did make a trade, a weird trade where they drafted somebody and then
They made like I couldn't even keep track
yeah,
of I was
it was so
watching
confusing, yeah.
like I was literally watching the draft like the first and second round trying to keep track of all the Knicks trades. They made like seven or eight trades in this draft and they were just like moving up and down and up and down the board like constant. They like traded one of their picks for like just cash like and then moved
Yeah, it
back
was a weird thing. Like drafted
like
someone and traded him. It was weird. I don't know.
It was so like I think they wanted to potentially trade up for Zach Edey. He was drafted with like the ninth overall pick, which I it's a fine value for him. Like he could end up being really good. I was hoping he'd fall for the Knicks, like maybe to like 15 or 16, and they could go up and grab him. Instead, they just ended up the they made so just to explain why they made all their these crazy trades moving around the draft. They were trying to manipulate the salary so that it would perfectly align that they could offer Isaiah Hartenstein like their the full Matt contract, the most
Right,
money,
I did hear
4 years
were
for
making
72.
moves that save some cap room so they can
And get
offer him a
under
max deal.
and so that because they still can't process through the Mikal Bridges trade because they need some more money to be able to sign over the first apron. There's some, I won't get into all the salary cap details, but they do need to shed some salary to get Mikal Bridges officially, which will it will get done. But so
And
that's
to
just
try to
part.
get signed Hartenstein, which didn't end up happening. We'll talk about it in
Yeah,
a
we'll get
minute.
into that too. But that's why they made all those crazy trades. But it was tough to keep track of. There was a they no team traded as much as the Knicks.
Right.
Maybe the Thunder did too. They traded a ton of picks, but
But the Knicks, the three most notable picks with 24th overall, they took Kyshawn George. 25th overall, they took Pacome Dadier from France. Now,
well, Kyshawn George was traded, so they traded him
Oh, he
away.
was traded. Okay. See, basketball's not, I don't, I'm, I don't know ball. I don't know ball.
They traded away Kyshawn George. This is why it got so confusing because
Do
they
they
were
have
guys
Dadier, the
were
French guy?
yes,
Okay,
they do.
because,
They people
yeah.
were like half the draft was wearing the Knicks hat and like
Yeah, they drafted half the players, but only have like three.
yeah, so they drafted four guys. I would say the two most notable would be their first round pick, Pacome Dantier. He's like very raw talent, 18-year-old from France. He spoke, you know, he's definitely more at this point in his career, more of like an offensive focused player. But he has definitely a developmental pick. I think they made this pick for I'll say for two reasons. The first reason being that they maybe were considering a draft and stash in which he would stay in France and they would save some extra money to have a little bit more wiggle room on free agency because then they wouldn't have to pay that first round pick salary. The other, which, however, he did say he plans to come to New York. Will he? Will he not? That's
That
not
remains to be seen,
known.
yeah.
The second of which the Knicks traded a ton of first round picks for Mikal Bridges, so they don't have as many assets as they once did. Drafting a guy who's 18, he's more of a project. Let's say you know he doesn't really play very much or he stays overseas for the next year or two. You're basically then like drafting a 20-year-old who's a little bit more polished when you don't have a first round pick. So I think that's kind of why they went with him. I'm not a huge fan of drafting developmental
Especially when they're trying to make a run,
assets.
want guys that can contribute now, you
Exact
know?
yes, exactly. I most of these guys, like guys who are considered projects, were drafted late in the first round or in the second round from foreign countries, don't work out. There's a few like Nikola Jokic and guys like that.
Giannis. There's a guy named Giannis. I don't know if you heard of him.
Yeah, there's
Yeah.
like there's some of them that do work out, so obviously we hope so. But it remains to be seen, but I think that's those are the two main reasons. My favorite pick that the Knicks made is Tyler Kolek from Marquette. He was actually someone that they were considering with their first round selection, but he fell due to his age. I'm just going to give you a little stat on why I think he's going to be a great contributor for the Knicks. The list of every college player over the last 30 years to finish an NCAA season averaging more than 15 points per game and more than 7 assists per game while shooting over 49% from the field, over 39% from three, and over 85% from the free throw line. Do you know how many people are on that list?
I'm gonna guess it's not just him, is it?
It's just him. He
It's
is the
just him. The
only
only
player
one.
in the last 30 years with that stat line. So
So let
he's
me ask you
actually
then, how was he not a top 10 pick then? Why was he? I
he
don't care about the age. Is his defense like horrendous? Is that what it is?
yeah, he's not great at defense. He did
Ah.
play for Marquette and they're not really known for defense, but the real reason is his age. A lot of older players fell in this draft. He's going on 23. Or he is, I don't know if he is 23 or if
He
he's
is
going to
23.
23.
He
He
his
is
birthday was
23.
in March. So he'll
So,
be like 22, 23 for most of the season, though.
right. Play a lot of teams where a lot of older, more polished prospects fell in this draft that I think should have been taken higher. And then a lot of younger, more developmental prospects were taken higher in this draft because I think teams wanted guys with a higher potential ceiling, rather than guys who might just be, contributors now, but not, future superstars. But this guy for the Knicks, I think he's perfect for what they need. Not even being biased from a Knicks fan, I think that could be the best pick of the entire draft, just because of how explosive he is. On the offensive end, how great of a distributor he is. One of the key things that the Knicks were missing last season was a backup point guard for Jalen Brunson, a guy that could come into the game and, kick it out to all their many shooters. And they have even more shooters now, with Mikal Bridges, all these OG, Mikal Bridges, Dante, Miles McBride, all these guys are going to be open from three, from like the corner. This guy, he's the best playmaker in this draft class, so I think he could be it. And he's already 23 years old, so he's more polished. So I think an excellent pick. The Knicks, they also drafted two other guys in this class, but I don't think either of those guys are going to get very much playing time at this point. So they're more, I think they're going to be more two-way players that will only play with a bunch of injuries, based on how it's currently looking. But I would say their number one biggest contributor from this class is Tyler Kolek. Very excited about him. Don't think the Knicks need to add another point guard in free agency.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about him. Again, I'm not a basketball fan. I know I always leave that stuff, that knowledge to you, but I heard a lot of good things about Kolek, and I've been seeing everywhere that analysts are saying he's the steal of the draft and how he was like a perfect pick for the Knicks because, like you said, they
Right.
needed another scorer and like they can get away with him not being a great defender. And who knows, maybe he could be, develop his game to be just good enough where even hit
Right.
where his offense kind of outshines his poor defense in a way. So that
Exactly.
was a great pick. Hopefully, this is a funny little tidbit. Hopefully, his career turns out a little better than another guy named Tyler Kolek, who was drafted second overall in the 2014 MLB draft by
Oh.
the Miami Marlins. He was a pitcher And he never even made it to the majors. He was a second overall pick, and he did not perform well in the minor leagues, so he never made it to the majors. So hopefully, because when I saw Tyler Kolek, I was like, that name sounds familiar. And lo and behold, there was another Tyler Kolek. Hopefully, the next Tyler Kolek does not have the same fate as the Marlins Tyler
I
Kolek
think
that
he'll
never
make the
made it.
league.
I think he'll make the league. I
I have a
think
good feeling about that.
me too. One other notable pick was LeBron James Jr. was drafted 55th overall by none other than the Los Angeles Lakers, who currently have LeBron James. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it'll be the first time that a son and father were ever on the same team together on the floor.
Yeah, that's never happened
Yeah.
before in the NBA.
So, and LeBron opted out of his contract, and I think everyone's making like a joke of it. Like, he's not doing it to leave the team. He just wants more
No.
money. Like, he's going to stay with the
Well,
Lakers,
he's
obviously.
actually planning to take a pay cut because he wants them to sign or trade for a bigger name player. And then he's waiting to
So
see.
he can maybe win one and then head out, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like,
I think that's his plan. One or two more years for LeBron, I think. Yeah, I think if they won the championship this year, he'd be done.
yeah, if they win next year, maybe he'll be done. But that is pretty cool. I'm excited to see how that works. I just gotta ask though, from a basketball standpoint, is he just a name, or he actually has some sort of raw tools that you can develop, or is he more gonna be a role player that maybe with LeBron out there to be like a cool story, but he like what do you think his future in the NBA is?
Well, I'm gonna be honest with you here. If he was not Bronny James, and relayed, he should have stayed at USC or he could have transferred to another college program. He barely played this season. He suffered from cardiac
Yeah,
arrest.
that was scary.
It
Like,
was
honestly,
very
I wondered if he would even play. Like, I didn't even
yeah.
want to risk. That was very scary. I hope, you know, that he doesn't run into issues like that again. But that is a very scary thing to come back from.
Yeah, no, it's great how he made a quick recovery, got back on the court, but then he got back on the court in the middle of the season. He wasn't like fully conditioned yet. They were working him up to speed. He wasn't playing full minutes until like very late in the season. I think he needed like another year kind of like to get a normal 1 year at college to like
Right.
get his feet wet with the competition, get like normal minutes, prove himself, and then go into the league. So I think if he wasn't Bronny James and LeBron James' son, I think that he would have done that. And then I think it would be easier to gauge like his talent because we didn't, he averaged like 2.6 points per game, or something like that, or like 5 points per game in college. So like he wasn't making a significant impact. It's all like for future development and what he showed like in his workouts. I think other teams though were interested in drafting him. However, there were a lot of rumors that him and his agent were telling teams that he only wanted to play for the Lakers, and he was refusing to work out for other teams. So it was kind of destined to be. I think
Yeah, I'm glad it happened though. That is really cool.
I
It's a
do
great
think
story.
if I were the Lakers, I would probably have him start out in the G League at the start of the season to get him some more run rather than like being on the end of the bench. But he definitely should play with LeBron James at some point. For me, I would say at this point, seems like more of a bench option for I would say like role player right now, but it's hard to know with such limited exposure.
Right. Yeah, he's very raw. And like you said, so basically with him, there's really no scouting report because you've it's
None.
such a small sample size that you don't even really know. But I guess I was gonna say, why is he calling the shots? But then I remember, obviously, LeBron calls the shots. I mean, rightfully so. He can do whatever he wants,
Well,
but
they hired like one of Look, the coach they hired had has no coaching
Oh,
experience,
JJ Redick.
JJ Redick, except for coaching a fourth grade team. He but so like
Well, I wanted him, so you
right,
know.
they did a podcast together, they're friends. JJ Redick, he was announcer, solid basketball player, and he's
Hey,
their
listen, when
coach
you're
now.
LeBron and you're arguably the greatest player, you can do whatever you want, to be
Right.
honest. It doesn't bother me that he does that. Anyway, move on to some free agency moves. So the biggest one, we'll talk about the Knicks had a couple of moves, one that they made and one that they didn't make that will impact their season heavily. The first one and the biggest one, we already talked about the Mikal Bridges trade, but they've re-signed OG Anunoby to a 5-year, $212.5 million contract. That was a huge signing. We talked about it last week. They needed to get that done. They got Bridges, but they needed to keep OG. And although he is injury risk, the Knicks are better with him on the floor. So just kind of walk me through how important of a move that was.
It was a huge move. They had no choice but to re-sign OG Anunoby after trading RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley. Emmanuel Quickley got 5 years, $175 million from the Raptors. So
Yeah,
if
that was a big move too, you know.
huge move,
Huge move.
big move for like how they that's not a move for what Quickley's done so far in his career. That's a move for what they think Quickley's going to do in the future. But after trading two big assets, the Knicks traded, got those two guys for OG, and to let OG leave free agency would have been, nothing short of a disaster unless the Knicks signed like Paul George or made some crazy other trade. But OG, probably the best wing, arguably the best wing defender in the NBA. Very, very good corner 3-point shooter. He showed when healthy that he can be a dynamic scorer. He has a lot of scoring potential. Great floor spacer, just fits in really well with the team. So, although it's a lot of money that they gave a guy who's never made an all-star team, I think it was the right move for the Knicks.
Yeah, it was definitely a move they had to make because again, he is so you like I don't watch basketball, but when I've heard the Knicks are such a different team when
They
he's
are.
out there compared to when he's not. So a move that had to be made, that was the priority. Obviously, you wanted to sign Hartenstein and Anunoby because they were such crucial parts of the six key drivers of the success that they had last season, but OG was the priority. And they would like to have signed Hartenstein, which is why they did all those transactions at the draft to free up the most possible cap room they could have so that they could offer max deal. They offered him 4 years, $72.5 million, which seemed like a lot of money, but the Oklahoma City Thunder offered him 3 years, $87 million, and he did sign with the Oklahoma City Thunder. So the Knicks do not get to keep Hartenstein, unfortunately. And honestly, you can't be mad at that. I mean, he was a guy that came into the on the Knicks last season, kind of at a, he wasn't a contributor, wasn't a guy that you thought could play, every day and a guy that you would start every game. But then he was a big part of the Knicks' success and he rightfully so got his money. Would have loved to have kept him on the Knicks, but they could not. So two questions. One, how does that impact the Knicks? And I guess on the same lines, where do they go from here at the center position? Because Mitchell Robinson is still on the team, if I'm not mistaken, but he is injury prone. So what do the Knicks do from here?
It's a very good question. I'm happy first, happy for Hartenstein. You can't really be mad at him. He got significantly more money, and he went to a team in the West, so it's not like he went to like the Sixers or something like that. So congratulations to him. The Knicks, the center position, based on free agency, they let most of the free agents backup center market has already like signed, like they're all gone. Like the Knicks waited for Hartenstein. Most of these guys are signed. The guys, some of the guys that I were looking at for the Knicks, Andre Drummond, who the Sixers signed. He would have been a great fit for the Knicks. They only signed him for 2 years for $10 million. Jonas Valanciunas, he already signed. Goga Badazi, he was another guy on my radar. He re-signed. Jalen Smith, he a guy who didn't get a ton of run last year with the Pacers, but shot over 40% from 3-point range. He signed. Like this is the this is like the Drew Eubanks signed. Like these are the backup centers in the market. As you can, I'm like rattling off all the names of all the plan B options for the Knicks. They're all gone. So there's not really too many guys left on the free agent market. I think the Knicks are going to have to look to the trade market. They don't have a ton of assets, but maybe they do have some money because they did save up that money for Hartenstein. So maybe they take on an expiring contract of like backup center that's maybe a little bit overpaid but could still help them out,
Yeah.
or a guy who's a little bit older but only has like 1 year left on his deal. It would be if the Knicks do not get another center. I am a little nervous for the season because Mitchell Robinson, when he plays, he's great, but he has had durability concerns. And then who's gonna come in off the bench for the Knicks at the center position? Like Jericho Sims, he hasn't been too great in his limited playing time. Even if the Knicks re-sign Precious Achiua, he's 6'8", so he's a little too small to like go up against a guy like
Six
Joel
eight.
Embiid.
That's cool. I love that investment. 6'8" too short.
For the set, like you gotta be
Yeah,
at
I know what you
like
mean. They gotta be
10.
7 feet or
Like,
6'10".
yeah, they don't have anyone. Like they're gonna be playing guys potentially even in the playoffs, like Bam Adebayo, Joel Embiid, Kristaps Porzingis, and with Mitchell Robinson's like durability concerns. Yeah, Mitchell Robinson, he can only play like 25 minutes a game. So I think they're going to have to look to the trade market and try and get a veteran. Or I mean, the dream would be to get like Lauri Markkanen from the Jazz, but I don't think the Knicks have enough first round picks to be able to get him. So
Or they would literally not have a first round pick for like 5 years in a row. And that you can't do. As much as you
yeah,
could say that that team would be complete and they could really win a title, I think that there's a comes a point where I get the Rams did it, but it's different in basketball. You got to have some draft capital, you know?
they're not even allowed to trade picks in like they have to have a pick, first round pick every other year.
Yeah, I saw that because I was wondering why they did 25, 27, 29. Like I was wondering why they didn't do like 25, 26, 27. Like I thought that was interesting, but
Oh, I do think the Knicks are going to be active on the trade market to get another center. So they work in the dark, so to predict who they're going to trade for will be almost impossible. But I do foresee the Knicks making a trade for a center.
yeah, I think that's important, especially with the injury concern. It's like you're either putting Mitchell Robinson, who has durability issues, out there to start 35 minutes or like 35, 40 minutes,
There's
or
no.
you're trusting a guy that's very young that hasn't played much, and Jericho Sims and Precious Achiuwa, who are not proven to be starters. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
So I agree
they're in a
that,
rough spot.
yeah, they
And
really
there's a
needed to
lot of good
re-sign him,
centers.
but I understand why he went for the bag, though. I get that.
No shame against Hartenstein. Like he went to the number one seed in the West last year for more money. So
By the way, they're going to be, speaking of the team he did sign for, that's a dangerous team. I mean, they are going to be in the finals contention for the next few years. I mean, they did a rebuild and they did it right. I mean, they gutted everything. Now they have SGA, they have Chet Holmgren. They have, and then they
Caleb
just signed,
Williams.
yeah, they signed Hartenstein now. They're going to be very good for a long time.
And they kept their they signed their bench guys too. Isaiah Joe, and they signed a couple other retain. So they kept their team from last year and only added to it. So they're definitely going to
Oh
be one of the
boy,
best teams.
that's dangerous. Maybe the Knicks will see him.
Oh,
Hopefully.
that would be great. That would be great. Could only hope.
So another move that was significant, and this has to do with something you said before about how LeBron was taking a willing to take a pay cut in order to free up some cap room so that the Lakers could go sign somebody else to sort of and reinforce the roster. And that guy was supposed to be Klay Thompson, who the first, I think it was 12, 13, 14 years of his career had been a Golden State Warrior, won all those championships with them. But he's parting ways, and he was expected to sign with the Lakers. But then the Mavericks come in, they swoop him up, and he signs a 3-year, $50 million deal with the Mavericks instead. So was that all? Was that a smoke screen that he was going to go to the Lakers, or that was a legit thought that he was going to maybe go there? And then how do you think that impacts the Mavericks? Because we talked about a couple weeks ago when they lost that they needed another scorer outside of Kyrie and Doncic. So is he the answer at his age, Klay Thompson, with all the injuries?
Well, first, I think Klay Thompson to the Lakers was not a smokescreen at all. I think the Lakers were in serious contention for him. I'm almost a little surprised he didn't go to the Lakers. Would have been a very interesting add there for his addition to the Dallas Mavericks. I don't think it's as much of a needle mover as like the
Not
name would
moving the
appear.
needle.
Like he's not like Klay Thompson is not like you know how like guys age. He's had a lot of injuries. He tore his ACL and then tore his Achilles recovering from his ACL injury. And ever since that, he hasn't been like as dynamic of a player. Like he's the type of guy now who's not as consistent. When he's hot, but when he's cold, he's cold. So he's a little bit more streaky now. I think this past year he averaged 18 points a game, shooting 39% from three. So definitely still a solid contributor, but he's not like he's not a star player like he used to be. And I don't think he's going to continue to get better with age. I think it's in his case, probably the decline in age. So we'll see what happens with it. But the Mavericks did need to make a move to add a third scorer. So and they did what they thought would be best for the team. So and he has a lot of playoff experience, which is good for a team like the Mavericks that plans to contend again next year and try and make another run to win the finals.
Right. Solid move by them. I did think he was going to go to the Lakers, but he didn't. But nonetheless, very solid move. Hopefully that he'll, and like you said, you know what you're getting with Klay Thompson at this point.
Still
He's not the
solid,
same guy. He's a
but he's not.
solid player still. He's a Hall of Famer, but he's not going to be, you can't expect him to have the same production that he did. I don't think the Mavericks are expecting him to do that because they have Kyrie and Doncic.
And he got paid for what he is now, which is like a good sixth man. At least my opinion, like he's a very quality, like sixth man, seventh man. Guy who can play like 20 to 25 minutes a game and give you a couple, big 3-point shots when you need them.
Right. So good move for them. And then the final move we'll talk about here is Paul George. And this was rumored, and then it happened that he was rumored he was going to sign with the 76ers. He signed a mega 4-year, $212 million contract with the Sixers. It's a big move in a career. He's 34. So I don't know. I feel like that's a lot of money to give to a guy that's getting old. I mean, I guess he's still is playing at the top of his game. He hasn't really showed any signs of, slowing down, at least from what I understand. But that's a lot of money and a lot of years to give to a guy that's aging. But he's a Hall of Famer. He's had a great career, and I guess they're hoping that he could be another scorer. They did sign Andre Drummond too, so they're really trying to reinforce their team so that if Embiid gets hurt, they could still win some games. Or if he stays healthy, they have a lot of stars on the court. So thoughts on that move?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, Jay. I think this is definitely a win now move, like a win this year, win next year move. Paul George, he's all of the advanced metrics still have him as one of the best players in the NBA. So they're still getting one of the top guys, an all NBA player for this year. Paul George, though, when he's 38 and on a max, like a super max like max contract, making $40 million a year. Not sure he'll be the same player. So I think definitely an emphasis on the Sixers winning the NBA Finals this year or next year. They also re-signed Tyrese Maxey. So I think they're trying to capitalize on their team now. And they brought in arguably arguably the best free agent in the class outside of like LeBron James, who will re-sign with the Lakers. But arguably, like the best free agent in the class. So I think it's a good signing for them. But I think if they don't win the finals in the next 2 years, this could greatly restrict their ability to change up the core of their team.
I agree, and it's one of those moves, like you said, like that contract could look very bad
Yeah.
in, and also,
Oh,
so he could retire before it's over.
it could that's
Like
that is
that's
a
also
it's a
possible. I doubt
risky
it, but
contract for Paul George. Like if they win the NBA Finals this year, everyone's gonna be like, oh, he was the difference maker. If the Sixers, Embiid gets hurt again or Paul George gets hurt, the Sixers lose in the first or second round, they do the same the next year, it's not going to look like a good deal. So that's like one of those deals that kind of depends on how the Sixers perform in the postseason.
yeah, it this is one of those moves, like it's almost like in football when a team makes a trade like for a veteran, and then if it works out, it works out. It's like when the Rams traded for Von Miller and they gave up a lot to get him, but they won, so it was worth it. So you're hoping that this move, like they either win this year or next year. Like they're, he's still a good player. He's 34, but if he's still at the top of his game, even a little off of his game, he's still a top 20 player. So we'll see if that move ends up paying off. But one other move I think we'll talk about is Jason Tatum getting an extension.
Oh,
Just
yeah.
quickly, thoughts on that. 5 years,
Whew.
315 million. It's going to be 35% of the salary cap when the deal begins. So it's a lot of money. And I think honestly, he deserves every penny though.
Yeah. Hey, the Celtics won the NBA Finals. Jason Tatum, he's like considered their 1A or equal to Jaylen Brown. So you have no choice but to sign him. If that's what it takes to sign him, then you got the deal done. They're keeping their core intact. They signed Derek White to 4 years, $126 million today as well. So they're keeping their core. I mean, yeah, I think in the last year of his deal, he's supposed to be making over 70 million,
Wow.
71 million in the last year of that deal. So they're banking a lot on Jason Tatum, but I think if there's any player you want to invest in or one of the top, he's one of the top 10 players, top, 15 players, even some can, he could be considered a top five player in the NBA. So definitely a great move there. There is one other move I wanted to discuss as well before we move on. I think the best move so far of free agency has been the trade that the New Orleans Pelicans made for DeJounte Murray. The New Orleans Pelicans traded for like an all-star scorer, a very clutch scorer in DeJounte Murray, and they only gave up Dyson Daniels, Larry Nance Jr., and two first-round picks. And the Pelicans, I forget the exact stat, but I think in like one-score games last year, they were like 1-14 or something like
Oh
that.
my, yeah,
Like they were very
that's
bad.
historically bad, yeah.
And DeJounte, it was some, I don't know, I don't remember the exact stat, but it was bad. And DeJounte Murray is one of the clutchest scorers in the NBA. They now have a core of Murray, CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, and Zion Williamson. That is a lot of firepower on one team. So if Zion is able to stay healthy, watch out for the Pelicans because they have a lot of scorers on that team now, and they didn't trade up much to get him.
Yeah, maybe this will be the year that Zion like puts it together and is like is an MVP candidate. But you know, going 1-14 in one score games, like
It
there has
was
to be some
right. It was
positive
something, but
progression. Like even going like 7-8 is like crazy. But yeah,
yeah, it was something, but
that was a good move too. I forgot that that happened. That happened like early last week, so glad we were able to talk about it. But any other thoughts on basketball free agency before we move into baseball?
no, there weren't really that many other, like major signings. A lot of guys like Tyrese Maxey re-signed. We talked about quickly. James Harden went back to the Clippers.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that the Suns haven't made any moves, especially since they got swept in the first round. So that was a little interesting that they have Devin Booker, Beal, and Kevin Durant.
They'll trade KD somewhere.
I don't I you
Heard the
would have thought
rumors
that.
swirling.
Yeah, like you would have thought maybe they would have tried to mix things up in Phoenix. Looks like they might just be running it back. I think it's kind of been proven in the NBA over the past like 4 to a few years that I think a team with a lot of good players, and you need like a good bench, beats a team that has maybe like two stars on it. So we'll see. The East, my last comment is the top four in the East are going to be very exciting between, battling now between the Celtics, the Knicks, the Sixers, who just hit with Paul George, and the Milwaukee Bucks. I think the Bucks, if the Bucks, though, if they want to stay as one of the top teams in the East, I think they're going to have to make another move. But it's definitely a battle now for in the East. I don't think the Celtics are going to have as easy of a path to the one seed and to the finals as they did this past year.
Yeah, I think the Suns like their fans at least don't think their team is good enough to win, but their GM like tweeted that he thinks that's all like hogwash and that they're gonna be like a finals contender, and I'm just like, come on, man.
The thing is,
Come
they have
on, man.
three stars, three great players, but the
But
rest of
that's
their,
it
they have
though.
nobody else. Right. So
Yeah.
like it's, Kevin Durant's great, Devin Booker's great, Bradley Beal when healthy is a, excellent player, but like you look at the rest of that team and there's just nobody there. If there's an injury, the bench comes in, like
Right.
it's tough for them. So I think I'm surprised that they haven't added some more depth or made a trade so far.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, in our next episode, we'll talk about like free agency, like more free. I'm sure there'll be more moves, or if there's another trade or anything like that. But very exciting. First, day of today was the first day of free agency, so.
Yesterday.
Or yesterday, I'm sorry, but very exciting first couple of days. And I'm sorry if anyone on that's listening heard like a bunch of noise. I had to plug my laptop in, did not prepare adequately for tonight's show, did not charge my laptop because I was so focused on the Mets.
So excited.
So excited. And speaking of the Mets and baseball, we have something very exciting we're going to do right now, and that is our mid-season award prediction. So every team is about halfway there, 80 to 81, 82 games, and we feel like today is a good week to do our predictions. We will both be giving our AL and NL MVP predictions, AL NL Cy Young predictions, and our AL and NL Rookie of the Year predictions. And then we'll also give a for each award, we'll give like our who we think will win it, and then someone that also could win it, or a couple people. So I guess we'll do this. We'll go position or like award for award. And I guess we'll do it like snake order. Like I'll do AL MVP, then you do NL MVP, and then AL Cy Young, and I'll do NL
Yeah,
Cy Young,
yeah.
AL Rookie of the Year, that kind of thing. So
Sounds
it's
good.
fair. I'll start with my AL MVP. I think it's obvious it's going to be Aaron Judge.
Barring injury.
Barring, oh, so let's just get this out of the way now. All of these awards are barring injury, because if any of these players were to get injured, they will not win MVP. So they're all barring injury. But Aaron Judge, also, we'll say this right now, who is each award and like who we think it'll be Aaron Judge. He's 31 home runs already.
Yeah,
He is having his best season. And that's crazy to say, because 2 years ago, he had one of the best seasons of all time. He had 62 home runs, which set an AL record. He had a 11-11 OPS. He led the league in on base percentage. He led the league in walks. And this year, he's having an even better season. He leads the league in home runs, RBIs, slugging percentage, and OPS. His OPS is higher than it was that year. He is slugging 708. He has 31 home runs, 82 RBIs. He has 213 total bases. He leads in like almost every offensive category. And he leads the league in grounding into double plays. It's kind of funny to look at, but yeah, he is phenomenal. He is really something special. I think it's something we have to like appreciate how good he is. And he is becoming one of those Yankee all-time greats in the history of their franchise. They've had so many great players. I think he's really turning himself into one of the all-time great Yankees. He just needs that ring, but he'll have his second MVP. I think that's a no-brainer.
Jay, you summed it up perfectly. Aaron Judge is also my AL MVP. The only like if he doesn't get hurt and he keeps up on this pace, I don't think anybody can catch him. Gunnar Henderson has had a great year this year
Yeah,
as
he would
well.
be my dark horse to win
Yeah,
it.
like he's been excellent. Juan Soto as well. He's been a little cold as of recently. But he's another guy that's having a really great season. If anything were like if Judge got injured, he could definitely vault himself up into it. But I think Aaron Judge, he's the clear number one favorite right now in the AL MVP race.
I would agree. He's been phenomenal, but for dark horses, I would say like we both said, Gunnar Henderson or Bobby Witt Jr. Even
Yeah, Bobby
Bobby
Witt Jr.
Witt,
had a great year. Great year
yeah,
this year.
Bobby Witt Jr. silently had a good year, which is weird because the Royals are a good team, but like he has kind of like flown under the radar in a way.
Yeah, he
Gunnar
has.
Henderson has 26 home runs and a 989 OPS, and he's played a great shortstop, so he's been great. And Bobby Witt has been having a phenomenal season. Justin, were you saying something? I apologize.
Oh no, I was listening to you go.
Oh, and I was saying that Bobby Witt leads the American League in hits. He has 22 steals. The only thing against Bobby Witt is he only has 12 home runs, so he's not hitting as many home runs. And his OPS is 897, so not even really close to Judge and Henderson. But you never know. Those are just a couple of dark horses. So Justin, now that I gave my AL MVP, you give start with NL MVP for you.
Well, I think the guy who moved from the American League to the National League, mine is Shohei Ohtani. He's not even pitching, and I still think if he stays healthy, he's going to win MVPs, batting 316 with 26 home runs, 62 RBIs. Dodgers right now, number two in the National League. He has been a just as good, if not better, than he was on the Angels hitting. Just imagine when he starts pitching again next year if he's able to keep this up. He's been really good. I might have said Bryce Harper, except that Bryce Harper did suffer a hamstring injury a couple days ago. Probably will keep him out through the All-Star break. So could. That might be enough time so that he wouldn't have enough like home runs or RBIs to be able to compete with Ohtani. I also a few weeks ago would have said Mookie Betts because he was having a great season. He got injured as well. I think right now at this point, I'm giving it to Shohei Ohtani. He's just been so great this season.
He is talk. We talk about Aaron Judge. I mean, Ohtani, we really have to like appreciate what we're watching because I will put say right now, we will never see this again. There will probably be another two-way player. There will be, but I don't think they will be as good as Shohei Ohtani is. And also, like, I think it's kind of overlooked how good of a hitter he is because he pitched. But now that this year he's only hitting, you see, he's maybe the best hitter in baseball. He's definitely top three
Oh,
with Judge,
yeah. Hit.
Soto,
Yeah,
whoever
like.
else you want to put there, a Trout or Yordan. But he's the maybe the best hitter in baseball, and I think that kind of got overlooked because he pitched too. But he had 44 homers last year. He has 26 this year. He leads the National League, and the only reason that Judge like didn't win more MVPs is because Ohtani was
Right.
in the American League. But now that he's gone, now Judge can win
Yeah,
more.
now it's like now they can just both win MVP every single year. So,
Yeah, but if it's not Ohtani, I actually think Bryce Harper could still win it because he's only gonna miss like 2 weeks. Like it was
yeah.
scary because he said in a post-game interview because he pulled like a hammy and he said he never felt that before. So that was scary.
Yeah,
I'm sure
he
the
still
Phillies fan had
can.
really a fright.
Yeah, he it oh, it did. Yeah, I mean. Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper getting hurt in the same game. After they blew the game as well, it was not
Oh,
ideal.
yeah,
So
that was not a good night for you guys.
no, it's gonna be tough, for us for up until the All-Star break. Missing Schwarber, Harper, and Realmuto since we have to go up against the Dodgers and the Braves. So that's gonna be tough. I do think Bryce Harper can still win MVP. But he's gonna have like he's. My reasoning for picking Ohtani was just that, right when Bryce Harper comes back, he might not be himself for the first week or two that he's back as he's like readjusting. And it might just be long enough for Shohei just to hit a, like 10 more home runs. So, but
I
he definitely
mean,
still has a
Bryce
chance.
Harper, yeah. Go ahead, go ahead.
And yeah, he definitely still has a chance. Fernando Tatis Jr. also has a chance as well. He's another dark horse. Who's been having a great season. So if there's some more injuries, maybe he can vault himself higher in the conversation as well.
I agree. And the only way Bryce Harper's going to take this from him is if he like comes back and hits like 15 home runs in the month of August and ends up
But
with
he
like
could. He
40.
could.
He could. I mean, it's Bryce Harper. He easily
So.
he's also a top three, top five hitter. But I also think a dark horse, Ketel Marte, is quietly having a phenomenal season. The Diamondbacks aren't playing well, so it's kind of getting overshadowed. But he has 17 home runs. He's hitting 287. He has an 873 OPS. He's played great defense. So he won't win it, but he'll be an all-star. And he's had a good season too. In terms of WAR, though, he is among the leaderboards, and that's because he's played great defense as well at second base and center field. Well, now center fielder is Corbin Carroll, but mainly second base. He's played a great defensive second base. He won't win MVP, but he will probably be in the top five for voting. Just thought I'd mention that as a potential dark horse. Moving on to Cy Young. Justin, would you like to give us your AL Cy Young?
Oh,
Actually, you
sure.
know what? I want to start with the NL because I want to see what you have to say because I feel like I know where you're going with this for the NL because you're a fan of a team that has two, maybe even three candidates. So let's hear what your NL Cy Young is.
Well, my NL Cy Young pick is Zach Wheeler. He's just,
Soccer.
he's due to win a Cy Young. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball. For the past like 3 years, 2.73 ERA, 112 strikeouts on the season, innings eater. He's been great so far this season. I think he can even lower that ERA. Wouldn't be surprised about that at all, as he's been blown up in a few, given up a decent amount of runs in a few starts recently. So he's my pick. He's just so consistent and he's been very durable the past, knock on wood. For the past few years as well. Another guy Ranger Suarez. He's been good as well. He's been kind of tailing off the past few starts, but still, he's been having an excellent season. Dark horse, a super dark horse from the Phillies would be Christopher Sanchez.
Yeah, he's like
He's
leading.
been
I think he leads the NL in ERA right
he
now.
has been dealing recently. Christopher Sanchez with a 2.41 ERA. Highly unlikely he wins the Cy Young Award because he doesn't rack up as many strikeouts. But he has been great this season. So I would say there are three Philadelphia Phillies right there that are in the race. So my pick, number one pick, Zach Wheeler, just to make that clear. Another guy who I think has a potential chance to steal it away from the Phillies is Chris Sale, who is making a career
Yeah,
resurgence.
what a season he's had. I mean,
He
yeah.
is out of no, he was kind of like under the radar move from the Braves this past offseason. He has a 2.79 ERA this season, 10-3, 118 strikeouts. He has been very good. If he can stay healthy through the rest of the way, watch out because he could take the Cy Young as well.
Those are all great picks. Those are basically the same picks I had. My pick is Chris Sale. I think this is not
Ooh,
a
okay.
fluke. Chris Sale was once a phenomenal pitcher who got injured, and he made 11 starts between over the 3 year span from 2020 to 2022. So everyone thought he was done. Everyone thought he was washed. Everyone wrote him off, and rightfully so. I mean, last year on the Red Sox, he was not very good. So I think everyone kind of, pushed him to the side and said, okay, he's 35, he's done. But then this year, the Braves signed him to like a cheap deal. And well, actually, he's not on a cheap deal. I apologize. That's completely wrong. He's still on a deal from the Red Sox. So they traded for him, but they didn't even give up much to get him. And he comes in, he's having this resurgent season. He looks just like the vintage Chris Sale that we always know and love. He leads the National League. He leads the league in FIP. He leads the National League in WHIP, and leads the National League in strikeout to walk ratio. So he's not even, his numbers are real. They're not fluky. He's been phenomenal this season. And I think he really is the Cy Young right now. And if he keeps this up, he's going to win the Cy Young. And he hasn't even won one. Ever. He's another guy
Really?
like Zach
Wow.
Wheeler. Yeah, he finished 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times in the top 5, 7 times in the top 6 from 2012 to 2018. Over that 7 year period, he was finished top 10 in Cy Young voting. So, like Wheeler, he also has not won a Cy Young yet, but he's been very close. And the thing is with Wheeler, I'm a hater, man. I'm so mad still that the Mets didn't re-sign him. I wanted them to re-sign him in 2020, and the cheap Wilpons did not. And then he went to the Phillies, and a guy that it's pretty funny how his career has gone. He went from a guy that couldn't find the field to a guy that's been very durable. Now, again, knock on wood. He missed all of 2014, or he missed all of 2015 and all of 2016, and basically almost all of 2017. Missed almost 3 years. Comes back, has a couple decent seasons for the Mets. He leaves because the Mets don't want to sign him, and then he goes to the Phillies, and he's a perennial Cy Young candidate every year. I could see him winning one. I'm just being, again, I'm being a hater. But yeah, Ranger Suarez is up there, Christopher Sanchez, or very, very, very dark horse. You're gonna like this one.
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Paul Skeens.
Oh, that would be
Paul
crazy. That
Skeens.
would be crazy.
He likely won't have enough innings or counting stats to really be considered for the Cy Young, but he has been phenomenal as a rookie. He so far in 9 starts is he's 4-0 with a 2.06 ERA. He has 70 strikeouts and 52 and a third innings. He's been very good. He's been everything that we could have hoped for, and he's so entertaining to watch. But yeah, I don't think he'll have enough stats, but you never know. Maybe if
You
he
never
goes
know.
like 15-1 for some, I don't know, some
He
crazy
could.
stats.
He's been great. He's been great this season.
But to move on, as we're running out of time, my AL Cy Young is Tarik Skubal,
Okay.
who was
Yeah.
always a top prospect for the Tigers. He's pitched very sparingly over the last few years. He's shown flashes of brilliance. He's a hard-throwing lefty, which there are not many of them, but he showed that he had the stuff, but he never really pitched a full season. This is his first like full season, and he's been everything as advertised. Just for his actual numbers, so far he has a 2.32 ERA. He has 112 strikeouts. His WHIP is under one. He's having a great season for the Tigers. I think he's pretty much the consensus AL Cy Young right now. And this is the first year that he's finally put it all together. Again, with him, it's staying healthy because he hasn't thus far in his career. But if he finishes this season, I think he'll definitely win the Cy Young. He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball. Really fun guy to watch. I have him on my fantasy team. I took him early, thinking he could have a breakout year, and he has. Thus far, so he's my pick, but a couple dark horses. Seth Lugo, a former Met for the Royals, he has 11 wins. He's been really, really good. He's was a guy that the Royals signed to a pretty cheap deal, a 2-year $30 million deal, and he's paid mighty dividends for them. He has a two. He leads the league in wins, ERA, and innings pitched. So he's been an innings eater, and he's been successful. And then Corbin Burns. The Orioles pulled the trigger and made a big trade to try and solidify their rotation that was lacking depth, and he's been really good. So those are three options. I think those are three guys that are probably gonna finish top three, but I think it's gonna be Skubal.
Ooh, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's Tarik Skubal. He has been great this season. My pick is Corbin Burns, former Cy Young winner. He's just so consistent. One of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher, in Major League Baseball. And he's on one of the best teams in Major League Baseball in the Orioles, which
Right.
always helps, in voting. So he just for consistency and how great he's been, I'm going with Corbin Burns. My other runner-up, Tarik Skubal, he's been great as well. My dark horse is Garrett Crochet from the
Oh,
White Sox. He has
yeah.
been great this season as well. Don't think he'll win it, unless there's like some injuries to Tarik Skubal and Corbin Burns, because I think they're the top two like clear front runners right now for the award. But he has a 3.02 ERA with 141 strikeouts on the season. So he has been electric so far. He's finally putting it all together. Definitely a potential trade candidate at the deadline for a contender. So that could impact his status to be able to win the AL Cy Young, but he's been
Yeah.
great as well this season. Definitely a
Yeah, I
dark horse.
forgot about Crochet. He's been great this year. He leads the league in strikeouts. His stuff is phenomenal. He came up as a reliever.
He
I mean, he
did,
was
yep.
good doing that, but then they turned him into a starter. And I didn't think it was going to work out because I didn't think he had like enough offerings. Like I knew he was a fastball slider. Again, a really hard throwing lefty. But I thought he was a fastball slider guy, but he's kind of like reinvented himself to be a starter, and he's been every bit as advertised, and his ERA is 3.02, but I feel like it's should be lower than that with the amount of strikeouts he's had. But he's been the lone bright spot for the White Sox. He'll probably get traded, even though he's younger, like they could build around him. I think they'll trade him for something. But yeah, I think the only thing against Skubal, like you mentioned, is that the Tigers are probably not going to make the postseason. They're not
Right.
going to trade him. He's a guy they're going to like build around,
Yeah, I
but
would be shocked. I would be surprised if, but you never
yeah.
know. They get
You
a
never
great
know. You
offer,
never know. But Skubal to the Phillies would be cool.
but I wouldn't mind that.
But Burns and Lugo will probably be on playoff teams, so that's the only thing that I think Scooble's been the best pitcher, but Burns is on the playoff team, and especially if he like wins 20 games or 18 games or something like
Right, that's
that
right.
can impact things. So we'll see, but all good picks. And now we'll move on to the AL and NL Rookie of the Year. I'll just give both of my picks, and then you can give yours. So the AL Rookie of the Year, it seemed like it was going to be Luis Gil for the first 2 months of the season because he came on. He was not only an AL Rookie of the Year candidate, he was a Cy Young candidate. I mean, this pitcher for the Yankees, he's as electric stuff. He's a hard thrower. He's got great off-speed pitches, and he is filthy. He's electric, and he was great. He's still having a good season. His numbers are still good. He's 9-3 with a 3.15 ERA, but he's been blown up his last few starts. Against the Mets, he gave up 5 runs and 4 1/3. And then before that, he gave up 7 runs in an inning and a third to Baltimore. So he was a shoo-in for the Rookie of the Year. But now I think it's going to be Wyatt Langford, a guy who the Rangers drafted just a year ago last June. He tore up the minor leagues. He tore up spring training. He got called up and he really, really struggled early on. He only had one inside the park home run, no over the fence home runs for the first like 2.5 months of the season. And the only reason he was kept around, they were going to send him down, but they had so many injuries. So they kept him aboard. And then in the last 3 weeks, he's been red hot and he hit for the cycle last night. First player to hit for the cycle on Sunday Night Baseball. And a win over the Orioles. I think he'll be the Cy Young, but I still think Luis Gil has a good chance to win it. And then the NL, it's going to probably be Paul Skenes as long as he keeps pitching this way. And if he starts 20 games and has a good ERA and everything like that, he'll probably win it. But I think a dark horse is his own teammate, not only his own teammate, a fellow pitcher in Jared Jones, because everyone talks about Skenes, but Jared Jones has been a pleasure to watch on the Pirates too. He's another pitcher that the kind of came out of nowhere for the Pirates. He's been great this year. The two of them have been kind of taking the league by storm. You know, they're must-watch baseball every time they both pitch. They both have electric stuff. And I think the Pirates are set up with two potential aces for the future. And I hope that those two kind of turn out to be the 1-2 punch that everyone's talking about. So I think those are my AL and NL Rookie of the Year picks. I don't think there's as much conversation with those awards because there's less players that are considered. But yeah, so mine are Paul Skenes and Wyatt Langford. But yeah, Jared Jones could swoop in and win it, and Luis Gil could still turn it around and win it for the American.
Yeah, great picks there. I'll give my picks for the AL Rookie of the Year. I still have Luis Hill as the Luis Gil as the my AL Rookie of the Year winner. He has, as you mentioned, has been tailing off a little bit as of late. But he still does have, I think he has like a 3.07 ERA or around a 3 ERA. So still, still good stats on the year. I think he's going to be able to turn it around. Just hitting a little bit of a rough stretch in his rookie year. My runner-up or dark horse, Mason Miller from the Oakland Athletics.
Ooh, Justin, I hate to do this to you. He was my pick, but I found out that he exceeded his rookie limits last season.
Did
He
really?
did. I didn't
Act
want
really?
to. I apologize. I didn't want to put you on the spot here, but
Oh.
he was my pick too. He was my pick, like not even my dark horse, but I looked it up and I saw that he was not a rookie anymore. Which really
Oh.
is very sad, but yeah, he was my pick too.
Damn, okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know
Yeah,
that.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
No,
I
you're
have to
good.
give you the news.
Well, that was my dark horse. So I guess it's Wyatt Langford though, excellent dark horse as well. He was my third guy on my list. So another potential guy who's been heating up, as you mentioned, as of late. But I'm gonna stick with Luis Hill. He's been good throughout the whole year, still one of the best starters in the league. So definitely has a good chance of winning it. As the NL Rookie of the Year, I'm gonna go with the same pick. Paul Skeens, he has just been so good this year. It'd be hard to pick against him. He's just been one of the best players. Another guy, though, to consider, Jackson Merrill of the San Diego Padres. He has been good this year. He's hitting .294 with 12 home runs, 42 RBIs. He has 3 hits in each of his last 2 games, 5 RBIs in his last 3 games. He's been playing great baseball recently. So he is definitely a name to consider. And one other name, Shohei Imagana, from the Chicago Cubs. He got blown up against the Mets, but still has been a very solid option this year. He has a 3.07 ERA currently, 7-2 on the season. So he is another pick for NL Rookie of the Year. So we'll see what happens there.
All great picks. I forgot about Merrill. Merrill has been great. He wasn't even supposed to get called up this year. He was one of the Padres' top prospects, but they did call him up opening day, and he's been on the roster ever since. Was a little bit raw, and he never even played center field. I think he was a shortstop by trade, and then they put him in center, and he's taken off with it. Not only is he hit, like you said, but he's also played a great center field. I saw him play against the Mets. He had 2 home runs in that series. He has both off of lefties. So he's able to hit lefties as a lefty, which is really impressive for a 20-year-old. He's got great power. He's got good speed. He's going to be a fix in the Padres lineup for a few years to come. Very good pick. So overall, I think we have very, very similar predictions. We
We do.
do. Maybe that's just great minds think alike, or we're both completely wrong. I think we're both pretty much going to be
I think we're pretty accurate.
close.
I think barring injury, I think all these guys that we mentioned, they're like right at the top, of the
I agree.
conversation.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll come back at the end of the season, see how we did with those picks. But this was a long episode. We went through a lot. We went through the Mets, their victory, their stress that they caused me today with their heart-pounding victory, the NBA draft, the free agency, and then we did our award picks. A lot of great content covered. In future episodes, we'll talk about the trade deadline and what the Mets and Phillies should be doing as that approaches. And then soon enough, NFL training camp will begin. So we'll talk about that. Maybe we'll do some fantasy rankings and we'll do some predictions there. So a lot of great things coming up. Justin, any final thoughts before we sign off here?
Well, I did have a couple bold predictions for the rest of the
Oh,
season.
yes. Sorry.
I
Go.
did.
Yes, go
I
ahead.
had
Let's hear him.
I had two, as we're at the halfway point, did have two bold MLB predictions. My first of which is that the National League champion, Arizona Diamondbacks from last season, and the World Series champion, the AL NLCS winner, the Texas Rangers. I say that neither of them make the playoffs this season. I say they both miss the playoffs. And my other big prediction, Houston Astros end up topping the Seattle Mariners and winning the AL West. So those are my Astros come all the way back. From they were like 9 games back, 10 games back. I say they come all the way back, win the division. So those are
You know
two.
what? I don't think either of those are hot takes because I buy both of those. I think the Diamondbacks actually have a better chance to make the postseason than the Rangers do. The Rangers had lost 6 in a row until last night. They just have had a lot of injuries, and like the World Series hangover is a real thing. So I agree with that take, I think both of those teams will miss the playoffs, although I don't think by much. I think both teams will kind of win around 80, 81 games, and the Diamondbacks will be closer, I think. But the Astros are red hot. They're going to get Verlander back. They're going to get Luis Garcia back. They're going to get reinforcements, and their lineup's going to get Kyle Tucker back soon. They've been winning without him. So when they get him back, imagine what that lineup will look like. So I agree. I think they're going to end up overtaking the Mariners because the Mariners, as great as their pitching has been, which has been phenomenal, we didn't even mention any of the Mariners
Right.
pitchers. Logan Gilbert could win the Cy Young. Luis Castillo
Yeah,
has been
Castillo's been
great. Jordan
great.
Kirby, who like doesn't walk, who like historically is like the best control pitcher we've seen in the last like 30 years because he literally does not walk anybody. Their pitching has been so good that it's overshadowed how bad their lineup is. I mean, the Mariners have one of the worst lineups in baseball, and it's going
And
to come back
Julio
to bite
Garcia
them.
hasn't been good this year. He hasn't. He's been very underwhelming.
Who?
Rodriguez.
Oh, Rodriguez. Yeah. He
Yeah, he has
supposed to be
been.
the star of that team, and he hasn't been. Their pitching has kept them afloat. It almost reminds me of the 2015 Mets, where they had these great pitchers that kept them in it. But their lineup struggled. So if they're gonna make a run, they're gonna have to trade for a bat. Maybe they're the Luis Robert team. I don't know. If they get Crochet too, oh my goodness, that rotation. But we'll talk about that in a future episode. But yeah, I think with their struggles in the lineup, I think their pitching will keep them into the postseason. But I think the Astros are gonna eventually just keep winning and they'll win the division. I agree. And I actually will go one step further than that. My bold prediction is the Houston Astros will win the World Series.
No,
I
it's
think they'll get to an
definitely
eighth
gonna
straight
happen.
ALCS and they'll win the World Series. And you'll hear about, and it'll be another story about a team that started off so poorly. They'll end up winning 90 games. And then I think they're just going to cruise through the postseason and they'll win another World Series. I'm here for it. I love the dynasty of it. I know other fans don't, but that's my bold prediction.
Definitely could happen.
And I think Aaron Judge will hit more than 62 home runs. I think my other bold prediction is he'll break his own record and he'll hit 63 or 64. That's my other one. So we'll see if that happens too.
I'm hoping the Astros one doesn't come to fruition, but it definitely could. And I agree. I think Aaron Judge tops. If he stays healthy, I think he tops it.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool if he won't get the 70. I think people are starting to like talk themselves into that. There's just
He'll
I
get,
just
he's
don't
gonna
think
get into a cold streak at some
yeah.
point. It's
He'll
only,
probably like 55 or something, which is still great. It still won
yeah,
MVP,
it's
but I just
like
yeah,
still he'll. He still be MVP, but for him not to go into some sort of slump at some point in the second half, I'd be surprised. So
for him to hit 39 in the last like 83 games, that's just not gonna happen. He'll still probably hit 50 something. Maybe he'll hit 60, which would be great. But I think the Astros will win the World Series. That's just I don't know what I think. I think that's my bold prediction though. But it's been a great episode. We talked about a lot. And again, we'll kind of go over the trade deadline in the next episode, and we'll talk about the state of the Mets as the season progresses and we get closer to August, which where we'll really see who's a legit contender and who isn't. We'll see if the Mets can keep up their winning ways and especially their offensive firepower that they've been the best offense in baseball the last month. We'll see if they can keep that up. But until then, we will see you all in the next episode. Y'all hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to download and subscribe and turn on notifications so that you always get notified when a new episode of Penn Station Sports Talk is released. And we will see you all in the next episode. And we wish you all a good night.